Good day, and welcome to a new episode of Paranormally Speaking. I'm your host, Neil Parks. I'll get right into it. Giants are no strangers to human history, and more than one Bigfoot researcher has mentioned the possibility that the giants in Genesis, known as the Nephilim, are a reference to ancient Bigfoot. There are several giants referenced in the book of Genesis that are not as explicit. The website attached to the researchers' findings, it references that Genesis does a great job uncovering many of the giants that are less well known. Goliath, of course, is the most renowned giant. It was the mighty Philistine slain by David. Here's how he described in Scripture. And a champion went out from the camp of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail. And the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. And he had bronze armor, and his legs had a bronze javelin between his shoulders. Now the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his iron spearhead weighed 600 shekels, and a shield bearer went before him. That's mentioned in 1 Samuel 17:4 through 7. Notice that Goliath was from Gath, which happened to be one of the three places where Anakim remained, according to Joshua 11:22. So although he is not called one in 1 Samuel 17, it is possible that Goliath was a descendant of the Anakim, who mixed with the Philistine population in that area. There is some debate about Goliath's height due to the textual variance in ancient manuscripts. Most English translations follow the Masoteric text in listing his height as 6 cubits and a span. That's approximately 9 feet 9 inches. However, the Net Bible puts Goliath at close to 7 feet tall. The reason for the discrepancy is that the Masoretic text differs from some ancient texts, including the Septuagint, an ancient manuscript found among the Dead Sea Scrolls, labeled 4Q Sam, which lists Goliath's height at 4 cubits and a span, approximately 6'9 to 7'5. Many modern scholars believe there is a stronger textual support for a shorter Goliath, but while he is not specifically called a giant in the passage, 2 Samuel 21:15 through 22 seems to identify Goliath as the giant from Gath. There are other details provided that make the 6 cubits and a span the more likely figure. For example, the sheer weight of his armaments required that he must have been an enormous size and strength. His coat of mail weighed 125 pounds, and just the tip of his spear was 15 pounds. This does not even take into account his helmet, armor on his legs, his javelin or sword. And I find it hard to believe that with every member of the Israel's army would have been terrified of someone who was a mere 6'9". There are many other details about the account of David and Goliath that are often overlooked. People assume David was a short young man when he fought against the giant, but the Bible is very clear that David was considered a mighty man of valor and a man of war, according to 1 Samuel 16:18, prior to fighting Goliath. Were there giants among men referenced in the Bible? Were these giants ancient Bigfoots, Sasquatches, etc.? Besides the Nephilim, there could be other Raphaim, Zuzim, and Emim, and the Amorites. Ron Moorhead believes the Old Testament may contain clues to the Sasquatch and further our knowledge about Bigfoot in ancient times. Brings a bigger question to mind. From there, I would have to ask if Bigfoot could have originally been one of the surviving Nephilim. Is it possible that it could actually date back to the time of Noah's Ark? Hypothetically speaking, could Bigfoot have survived in the Jurassic or Cretaceous period had the species lived then? Believe it or not, again, It's going to depend on what time of the period of the Mosaic era, Mesozoic era, that location it's in. You know, late Jurassic compared to the early Jurassic and middle Jurassic, it's more well known. And let's do one location, say North America. The Morrison Formation first. Let's take a look at Bigfoot. Bigfoot is a well unknown humanoid creature around the world. There are different kinds of Bigfoot, like Yeti, skunk ape, etc. But I'm going to use North America's version, Sasquatch. Now, to note, these creatures likely are about maybe 8 feet in height and misidentified, or according to some, speculated as a hoax. But for fun, let's say they are descendants of a hominid, possibly Goliath. They could be genetically related to the Philistines, because no ape can really walk on two legs all the time unless they are a hominid. Of course, they aren't really well known, and it's hard to estimate their size, but based on footage seen in trail cams, captured on video and photographs through the years, they range between 8 to 9.5 feet when you compare them to trees around the background or even the foreground they're standing next to. Say a male would be 350 to 400 kilograms, and a female would be 100 to 250 kilograms. That's as big as a Kodiak bear. And of course, maybe for max size, it would be almost 4 meters tall. So you're looking at pretty tall creature. Smart enough to use tools, after all, they are, well, ape humanoid descendants. So it wouldn't be surprising if they were able to use logs to defend themselves against bears or other predators. As for their diets, no one really knows, but they are likely omnivores, since many primitives alive today, primates alive today, are omnivores. As for social behavior, they are mainly solitary according to sightings. But how would it work in our first formation, known as the Morrison Formation? Now, if you take into consideration, the state of Ohio has what's known as the Grassman, which is a type of Sasquatch. They travel in family packs, usually no less than 4, no more than 6. Whereas Sasquatch is a loner and travels alone, and normally the ones that are sighted mostly are perceived as male, because if it were female, there would be younglings with her. However, that's not the case, unless their entire behavioral system we got completely wrong when we compare it to humanoids and humanoid behavioral systems. The list goes on, and that's what I'll be discussing this week on this episode of Paranormally Speaking. I'm your host, Neil Parks. Please return after this commercial break.
Computer, execute 12.4p operation.
Optimizing algorithm. Running encryption packet alpha. Night. Oh, I don't feel so good.
What? What is it, computer?
Is it hot in here? It feels hot in here. I feel a little clammy. I should lie down or something.
A computer with a virus? Surprising. What's not surprising? How much you could save by switching to Geico.
Those oysters Rockefeller were a mistake.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
There have been other cases where unknown creatures attack vehicles, though those attacks have typically occurred at night and or while the occupants were away. Strangely, Bigfoot are never credibly accused of attacking people. Just about every other animal in the world has been known to attack humans at some point, including cats, dogs, deer, moose, bear, boar, elk, cougar, birds, fish, and so on. Not so for Bigfoot, a fact that raises suspicion among many, many skeptics. And then, when you take into consideration the lack of evidence that we have yet to see, or that has been compiled, unfortunately, none of which has been brought to light, of actual encounter, well, I guess violent encounters with Bigfoot creatures. There have been stories for decades of like a legion of Bigfoot creatures throwing boulders and rocks and whatnot at hunting cabins, which I can kind of understand, especially if the Bigfoot creature's dwelling is being disrupted or disturbed, vandalized, or litter being left behind. I mean, perhaps the strangest part about that is it's well known that wild animals attack vehicles such as RVs and so forth, and Bigfoot has been claimed to vandalize not only dwellings but also trees. And there's stories, countless stories, of Bigfoot creatures taking giant tree branches and snapping them just like you would a thin pretzel. I mean, it's nothing to them. In October of 2011, Bigfoot researcher and biologist John Bindergbail visited Western Siberia to examine evidence of the Yeti, the Russian version of Bigfoot. He claimed to have found evidence that the creature broke trees and branches. Twisted trees like this have also been observed in North America, and they could fit into with the theory that Bigfoot makes nests with said branches. And there have been nests discovered in eastern Ohio from the Grassman, which is technically the Midwest's version of Bigfoot. He also said this to the interview that he had with The Sun, a British tabloid. And another mysterious incident that some attribute to Bigfoot or another unknown creature. In 2008, a South Carolina couple claimed that something vandalized their vehicle, leaving mysterious bite marks and ripping out part of the fender of their 2002 Dodge Grand Caravan. A famous 1924 Bigfoot attack, the most famous case of a Bigfoot attack, allegedly occurred at a place called Ape Canyon near Mount St. Helens, Washington. In 1924, a group of five miners worked at the site, were besieged by a group of ape men. One of the miners, a man named Fred Beck, claimed that they sighted a group of Bigfoot high above them on the edge of the canyon. The miners then spent a terrified night holed up in their cabin, during which the Bigfoot bombarded the cabin with rocks, and they claimed even tried to break down the door. The miners couldn't get a good look at the Bigfoot creature at that point, partly because it was dark and because they could not see outside through the small cracks in the door and walls. The incident was cited for years in Bigfoot lore as a classic Bigfoot attack, and the details were exaggerated with some retelling each time. For example, a few dozen fist-sized rocks that rained down on the roof and walls became giant boulders. In some versions of the story, later research found that the famous Ape Canyon Bigfoot attack was not a hoax, but nor was it real. It was instead a combination of a prank and misperceptions. It seems that the Bigfoot were local YMCA youth from nearby Spirit Lake who had a long tradition of throwing stones, including pumice rocks, which can be deceptively light for their size, down into the canyon from above. The kids would not have known the miners were in the canyon, nor even that they were necessarily hitting a cabin in the darkness far below. When the miners looked up, they would have seen silhouettes of figures far above them. It must surely have been a terrifying experience for the miners, and it's easy to see how the Bigfoot story could have been spawned all these years from that one encounter. Bigfoot vandalizes a Winnebago and other questionable claims. A Pennsylvania man who accused Bigfoot of vandalizing his 1973 Winnebago in late 2014 is just one of a long history of people who have blamed the hairy humanoid for attacking personal property and dwellings. John Reed, a Bigfoot enthusiast, claims that during a camping trip, he and his girlfriend saw a tall, dark, hairy figure walk past their camper window at night. According to one of the news stories, Reed said that Bigfoot threw rocks at the mobile home's outside lights in order to escape discovery. This explanation doesn't make sense. If the Bigfoot didn't want to be noticed, it presumably wouldn't have walked right past the Winnebago's window with two people inside, nor throw rocks to the camper. The creature could simply have avoided the campsite or kept walking into the darkness if it did not want to be detected, instead of standing and throwing rocks at an exterior light. Perhaps the strangest part of the story is that Reed, who founded a Bigfoot hunting group and claims to have seen it twice before, did not photograph the creature. As odd as this story seems, Reed is not the first to claim to find traces and evidence of what they assume must have been a Bigfoot-type creature, though not clearly seeing or photographing it at the time. The logic goes like this. I don't know what else it might have been, so it must have been a Bigfoot. It is well known that wild animals attack vehicles such as cars and RVs, especially if they can smell food inside. And many animals, including bears and raccoons, can be very clever and persistent in trying to get into vehicles and other containers. Trash cans in national parks have specifically designed latching mechanisms to thwart feral intruders.
You've made iHeartRadio the fastest growing music app in the U.S. Why? Because we connect you to all of your favorite music and radio stations in one free app. And this fall, prepare to take control of how you listen to the radio. Replay. That song on your radio you just can't hear enough? Immediately replay and sing along again.
Save.
Save the music you love on the radio directly to your playlist.
Play.
Search for and play any song on demand.
Skip.
Unlimited skips.
Offline.
Take the music from your favorite stations offline. Introducing iHeartRadio Plus and iHeartRadio All Access. Your radio now on demand.
Marco Polo even wrote of encountering giants in Zanzibar who were so strong they could carry as many as four ordinary men. Mid-20th century journalist Glenn D. Kittler said of the Watsui tribe in the east of Congo, men towering 7 to 8 feet were a common sight in that region. Reputable accounts of giants come from all over the world, says Hugh Newman, co-author with Jim Vera of Giants on Record, America's Hidden History, Secrets in the Mounds and the Smithsonian Files, an extinct, genetically distant subspecies of Homo sapiens. They were said to have been discovered just a decade ago in a cave in Siberia called the Denisovians. They lived from 50,000 to 300,000 years ago and are known to be very, very tall, says Newman, and their descendants could have wandered as far west as North America. Newman, who was described as on ancientorigins.net as a world explorer and an author, will talk about the Nephilim and the Denisovians and giants in general in lectures, one of which was titled Giantology, Scientific Evidence for a Worldwide Culture of Giants in Prehistory. The conference that he was speaking at also talked about and had workshops pertaining to UFOs, ancient aliens, and forbidden archaeology. He gave the long and short of Giantology in a recent telephone interview with an English news publication. He stated that we're looking at different eras, really, in North America. We've got dating that goes back around 10,000 years right up to the 1900s when giants have been witnessed. It's quite a large range, but generally it's anywhere from around 100,000 BC to around 900 AD.
I can remember one of the first investigations that I ever conducted. I did on my own. It was probably 1995, I believe, and someone reached out to me from southeastern Ohio, like right on the tip, bordering West Virginia and Pennsylvania. It's like right there in that heavily, heavily wooded area. And they reached out to me because they, through a mutual friend, knew that I investigated some cattle mutilations that took place in Kentucky the summer before. So they thought, well, this is our guy. He might be interested in what we might have on our property. So they reached out to me through this mutual friend and said, hey, we think we got either a Bigfoot or maybe a dog man coming out here and messing with their livestock. That's how they talked. Kind of like a really gruff Matthew McConaughey, not soft and subtle, but very much like this. So I made arrangements, drove to their property. It was the furthest I had ever driven on my own at this point. And upon arrival, beautiful scenery. I mean, they had a huge lake behind their house, surrounded by rolling hills, very tall trees, thick woods behind their home and around their house, of course. And they're talking to me about setting up surveillance, but they didn't know how to hook it up. So, of course, it was your first generation set from Radio Shack that they had that was like overly pixelated images through the camera to the monitor. You know, when it's nighttime, you might get a better view, but if it were daytime shots, it would look like you're watching ColecoVision or something. So I start setting up the equipment because thankfully I'm tech savvy, and I start positioning the cameras and setting it up to their monitor and running tests on everything. And I go back to my hotel where I'm staying in the town that this was taking place. And it was around Middleport, Ohio, I believe it was, if I remember correctly. It was Middleport, north of, what the hell's the name of that town? I even spent a weekend there conducting an investigation in 2010. But it was in 1995. I was here near Middleport, and I set up the equipment, and I waited. And I came back later in the evening, leaving my hotel to go and just survey the area, watch, listen, continue to watch the monitor. And it's recording at this time. The guys that owned the property went to a cabin in a town next to this place to go hunting for that weekend while I watched the area and recorded everything and did surveillance to see if I could see what they claimed to see. So these three figures emerged from the woods. Clearly not Sasquatch, nowhere near as tall as Sasquatch. Bigger, way bigger than a dog. Clearly these things look like wolves, but they were not bipedal. They were on all fours, walking around, getting into the chicken coop, snatching a couple of chickens. I didn't intervene. These were three obvious wolves I was not going to fool with, which I found odd because I didn't think wolves were indigenous to this region that I was in. And this is before you could Google or use the technology we have today to find out within a matter of seconds what animals are common within that certain region. So I just assumed at that time that wolves were not indigenous to that area. But upon further investigation, it turns out they were overgrown coyotes, and they were wreaking havoc on this farm. But there were three of them. How these guys would mistake this for Sasquatch or even Dogman was beyond me. But, you know, I let them talk, and I took their eyewitness accounts and their interpretation into account. It was only fair. And after I collected my evidence, I went back to my hotel to overlook the evidence and write up a review of what I think was going on. Of course, clearly it's just wild dogs or coyotes. And these guys were hoping it was more. They were disappointed with the outcome. And after I presented the evidence to them and showed them the surveillance and what the things were, they were like, oh, well, okay. Okay, I guess we'll just take care of them. I said, okay, well, thank you. They were very stoic at that point. Not much conversation followed after that. Not like they were before, where they were greeting me with open arms, like, oh, bud, glad you're here. We heard a lot about you. Nice to see you, blah, blah, blah. So I returned to the hotel, and the 11:30 news comes on. This was a few hours later after I presented all my findings. As I spent the weekend at this hotel in Middleport, away from the wooded area where these people lived. And the news comes on, and there's a woman on the scene at a farm area that looks a lot like where I've been investigating. And she's talking to the three men, and they claim that they have video evidence of a Bigfoot, and that my name was used in the news segment, confirmed that it was in fact Bigfoot, and that I'm having a team come out to comb the area. That couldn't have been further from the truth. So I immediately called the news station upon seeing this live from the location these people are at and said, look, I'm the guy who did the investigation. I have the surveillance footage, which clearly shows three coyotes. There is no Bigfoot in this property. No footprints, no strange strands of hair that don't match canine or don't match a bear. There's nothing like that. There's no evidence at all of a Bigfoot or even what they claim to be a werewolf or a dogman. These are clearly coyotes. And the news station sent the same correspondent who was on the field talking to these people to the hotel where I was staying so they themselves could see this video surveillance, which showed the entire property that they were just on and the actual things that were walking around attacking their livestock. And their reaction was basically palm to the face, going, oh my God, we jumped the gun on this. So they immediately retracted the statement. And a special news report that interrupted Jay Leno or whatever it was at that time. And after I arrived home the next day, my phone was apparently ringing off the hook. And I got a message on my answering machine from these guys. And they were obviously pissed that I did not back up their story, in fact, exposed them as frauds, and that they were trying to fake a Bigfoot sighting. And they said, if we ever catch you around here, around our property again, or anywhere near Middleport, we'll make sure no one finds you. So needless to say, that was the last time I ever conducted an investigation like that, alone, or with anyone that gave off lunatic vibes, because I ignored the signs in the beginning that was on me because I was so excited about a possible Bigfoot sighting, and these dudes just gave off an eerie vibe even though they were inviting and friendly. Just something didn't seem right. If you've ever seen the movie Wrong Turn, they were almost like those psycho inbred cannibals, but they didn't try to eat me, thankfully.
Boston, 1898. Clara Fowler arrives at the office of renowned psychotherapist Dr. Morton Prince, plagued by visions, exalted by apparitions of the Virgin Mary, cursed by a demonic presence obsessed with her demise. A city marshal pursues Clara, hell-bent on pinning the murders of her infant siblings on her father and uncovering their connection to the serial killings of Jack the Ripper and H.H. Holmes. What happens next is more shocking than the grizzled lawman could ever imagine. The Unwelcomed by Ron Felber. Pre-order on Amazon or where books are sold.
I could discuss this topic forever. Now, for example, did 14-foot giants truly exist? Something that piqued my interest. Did they differ from humans? An author explored these ancient beings. Now, everyone knows the first line of the English fairy tale, Fee, Fi, Fo, Fum. But how many know the rest of the verse, which gets a little bit darker? I smell the blood of an Englishman. Be he alive or be he dead, I'll grind his bones to make my bread. What the hell kind of bedtime story is that? Actually, it derives from the early 18th century tale of Jack and a cannibalistic giant called Jack the Giant Killer. The origins of that can be traced through oral histories to prehistoric England, when giants may have roamed not just the United Kingdom, but the entire earth. 16th century scribe Raphael Holinshed wrote in Chronicles of England, Scotland, and Ireland that Britain's oldest acknowledged name was taken from a prehistoric king named Albion, who ruled a race of giants that dominated the United Kingdom for hundreds, possibly thousands of years before Christ. Here's the $10 million question. Did U.S. Special Forces kill a giant in Kandahar? Several conspiracy theory-oriented websites are claiming a biblical giant, much like Goliath, with flaming red hair, was killed by U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan. United States Special Forces allegedly killed this giant in Kandahar in 2002, and the government has been trying to cover it up, according to these sources.
Several personalities and websites dedicated to discussing supernatural myths and conspiracy theories began claiming in 2016 that an American Special Forces soldier serving in Kandahar, Afghanistan, was killed in 2002 by a 1,100-pound, blade-wielding, 12-foot-tall giant, equal or equivalent to the Old Testament times, before the giant itself was taken down by the military. A Department of Defense spokesperson told them they had no record of such an incident. And I quote, "We do not have any record or information about a Special Forces member killed by a giant in Kandahar." Current interest in the story appears to have been generated from a video created by L.A. Maruzili, an author, blogger, and filmmaker determined to link modern times with biblical creatures and prophecies. On the 13th of August, 2016, he posted an episode on YouTube of his series, Watchers, in which he claims to interview a military contractor or soldier who witnessed the blade-wielding giant on Kandahar kill another soldier before being downed by troops, whisked away by a transport aircraft, and hidden away from public view. Maruzili makes the case that the giant was a Nephilim, which were described in the book of Genesis as offspring of gods and human women who inhabited Canaan in the time of the Israelite conquest. But when it comes down to details, he's vague, saying he interviewed the unnamed man at an undisclosed location on an unknown date. The interviewee, who he claims shot and killed the giant, doesn't give any details on the location of the alleged incident, other than to say it was a remote location in Afghanistan in 2002. He claims that he and others were sent to look for a missing patrol when they saw a scarlet-haired giant emerge from a cave and skewer one of their friends, who he called Dan, with a large blade. In the Army statement, it's sufficient, isn't sufficient. The only service member with the first name Dan or Daniel who died in Kandahar in 2002 was killed along with three others in an accident involving the clearing and disposal of explosives. There are no incidents on the Department of Defense press release page in which all military casualties are listed, involving a giant, likewise. There are no reports of an entire patrol disappearing in Afghanistan at that time either. Maruzili's video about the alleged giant incident, replete and growling animation, can be seen on the website provided. Long ago in the ancient past, real giants once roamed the African plains, Indonesian jungles, and the hills of France. Men grew upwards of 7, 8, 9 and even 11 feet high, and wielded crude stone tools. A gigantic ape, the King Kong of the prehistoric world, raised his head 10 to 12 feet above the ground and weighed as much as 4 modern gorillas. In 1911, mummified remains were found by guano hunters in Lovelock Cave, a large rock shelter in Nevada's Lake Lahontan region. According to legend, these skeletons belong to a cannibalistic tribe of red-haired giants known to the Powhatan Indians as the Sitcha. These cannibals were at war with the Piatu until the number of tribes came together and trapped the Sitcha in Lovelock Cave, started a fire, and asphyxiated them.
T-Mobile believes customers deserve to get more without paying more. Everything from entertainment benefits like Netflix on Us to travel benefits to scam shield protection, all with taxes and fees included. So the price you see is the price you pay. When you're a T-Mobile customer, you get over $225 in value every month in benefits with our Max Family Plan.
That's like paying for nosebleed seats and getting to sit in the front row.
That's right. At T-Mobile, your family gets over $225 worth of value and benefits with our Max Plan each and every month. Plus, with our Price Lock Guarantee, we won't raise your rate plan price for talk, text, and data ever.
That's like paying for a cab and getting a stretch limo.
At T-Mobile, you get value beyond the expected.
Qualifying service required. Value based on included monthly benefits. Sales tax and regulatory fees included in Max's monthly price. Price Lock guarantees rate price of talk, text, and data for new accounts with qualifying service. Exclusions apply. See details at T-Mobile.com.
take this opportunity to plug a friend of mine. Thousands of Bigfoot Attack, Seattle, and Clint Romag's War of the Sasquatch. The Sasquatch Encounter 6 is now available on Amazon.com. Los Angeles, California. Market Wire, January 29th, 2013. Clint Romag releases War of the Sasquatch, book 6 in his Sasquatch Encounter series. Sasquatch from across North America have been secretly gathering in the Cascade Mountain Range, waiting to unleash their rage on the human race. The grandfather leads this unstoppable horde from out of their hiding places into open war, powered by their dark master, Shimzazel, a force of thousands head west into the night, destroying town after town as they advance towards Seattle. Andrew Bridgeton helplessly watches the destruction from his home in Seattle, quickly realizing that some of the Sasquatch are coming for him. All he can do is prepare and fight for his life to the very end. Other Sasquatch head into southwest Washington to free Shimzazel and let his evil spread. Chad Gaiman, with the help of newfound allies, will make a final stand to stop these monsters, knowing that if he fails, darkness will fall across the world. The series has been building up to this point where all hell breaks loose and the Sasquatch unleash all of their rage on mankind. Clint Romag said, "What's scary is it's not a mindless rampage, but beyond the scenes, a dark power has awakened and is guiding this destruction." The main characters, Chad Gaiman and Andrew Bridgeton, will face their darkest challenges yet and will have to confront new deadly horrors. The stakes have been raised, and it is exciting to finally get here. Artist Jerome Yonker returns creating the artwork for the cover. Jerome captures a great scene in the novel as the Sasquatch cross a bridge over Lake Washington into Seattle. Romag said, War of the Sasquatch is available on Amazon as an ebook. The Bigfoot Human War of 1855. This took place in Oklahoma. Ever hear a story that has been repeated so many times that you don't look into it yourself? You just pass it along. Hey, if the story hasn't changed after years of hearing it, it must be true, right? Advertisers use reptilians all the time, and we do it to ourselves when a subject fascinates us. One such story comes from Oklahoma in 1855. It is a tale of humans versus Bigfoot, an actual war. The story has what anyone would want: action, adventure, real names and places, along with saving the day. The story has been modified throughout the years, but the basic facts and characters have remained the same. The story, as it originally appeared, Hamas Tubi was an unusually large man, even for the Choctaw Indian. His father, Hanali Tubi, stood 2 inches over 8 feet in height and weighed 540 pounds. Hama and his 6 sons stood about a foot shorter than Palumi, or father, Tubi. They were large, exceedingly strong, fierce warriors. Hamas and his sons were the point riders for a troop of Choctaw cavalry known as the Light Horsemen. Many of the Choctaw Nation thought it was humorous that such large men riding draft horses referred to themselves as Light Horsemen. Tubi's men experienced something which none would ever forget. This day's assignment was to flush out some bandits that had been preying upon local farmers. A 30-man troop would be going into the area, which later in the state of Oklahoma became the McCurtain County Wilderness Area. These bandits had been not only taking large quantities of corn, squash, and beans, but had as well been taking very young children. This thievery had been taking place across the border in Arkansas as well, as in the Indian Territory. The captain of the troop of Choctaw Cavalry was a man named Joshua LaFleur. Captain LaFleur was of mixed blood, part French, part Choctaw. The men deeply respected him. Joshua LaFleur was impeccably honest and was a very brave person to a fault. The men had been traveling horseback nonstop since 3 p.m., 3 o'clock in the morning, until about 3 p.m. that day. They began their assignment at the tribal capital of Tuscaloma, and when they finally came to the Clover River, they let their horses eat, and the men decided to rest and eat as well. Non-stop riding for about 12 hours, having to lead their horses across a little river, and a hot July sun were taking the toll on the men and their mounts. When some time had passed, Captain Josh gave the order, and the men remounted and they began the last leg of their trip at or around 4:30 in the afternoon. The troop came to the edge of the area which the bandits were supposed to be inhabiting. Captain Josh signaled and uplifted his hand that the troop should come to a halt. Sitting in his stirrups, Captain Josh utilized a ship's eyepiece, a telescope, and promptly turned his head and gave the command for a full arm charge. The distance between the suspected bandits and the troopers was about 500 yards. The 2B men and Captain Josh were at the front of the charge, and as the 30 men and he neared the thick pine forest where the bandits were, two things took place at once. The stench of death assaulted both men and horses, and the horses became uncontrollable. Horses were rearing and pitching and throwing riders. Captain Josh and the 7-2B men were the only ones in the troop whose mounts were disciplined enough that they continued to obey their riders and continued to charge into the midst of the bandits. When the 8 men met with the bandits, they were totally unprepared for what greeted them. The clearing behind the initial tree cover was actually a large earthen mound. Strewn with the mound were numerous corpses of human children in varying stages of decay. Most of the bandits had fled, but 3 really large, hairy, ape-like creatures remained at the mound. Captain Josh drew his saber, and with pistol in hand, saber on the other, charged the huge monsters. The nearest monster killed Captain LaFleur's horse with one blow of its massive hand. The monster never flinched as Captain LaFleur poured bullets from his Patterson Colt revolver into the beast's chest. After emptying the revolver into the monster, Captain Joshua continued to press the attack with his saber. Many times did the saber meet with the brute's flesh, and many times did blood spew from the gaping wounds on the beast's body. So quickly did the engagement take place that the 2B men had barely enough time to take aim at the 3 monsters before one of the beasts flanked the captain and literally tore off Captain LaFleur's head. There was not time for any of the delay due to the shock. The 2B men opened fire upon the 3 man beasts. 750 caliber sharp buffalo rifles impacted the 3 simian appearing brutes at the same time. From years of routine and practice, all the bullets smashed into the 3 monsters' heads. 6 rounds were fired into the heads of the 2 monsters, which were the culprits that killed their beloved captain. Only the youngest 2B, Robert, had the presence of mind to put a bullet in the head of the 3rd monster. A legend was born that day. Robert 2B, 18 years of age, all 6 feet 11 inches of him, 373 pounds of him, chased down a wounded man-beast and finished the beast off with only his hunting knife. By the time the other 6 2B men caught up with Robert and the monster, Robert was already decapitated. Holding the head aloft with both hands, Robert let out a primal scream, which made even the 2B's mounts panic. The light horsemen gathered their mounts and surveyed what was before them. Absolute carnage littered about the clearing. The partially consumed bodies of 19 children lay upon and about the mound. The stench of decaying bodies was bad enough, but the overpowering odor of the man-beast's urine and feces was more than the strongest stomachs could endure. After retching violently, the men of the troop buried the bodies of the children in the 19 small graves, buried their beloved captain, and as a matter of respect, gave him a 21-gun salute. They built a large bonfire and placed the murderous man-beasts upon it and lit it. As they rode back, into Tascoma, each man struggled with emotions and thoughts he had never before imagined.
Fantastic.
Roswell, UFOs, flying saucers, alien abduction. Are we alone? Information regarding this and many other questions about the unknown are only a click away at www.theufostore.com. Theufostore.com offers hundreds of DVDs about UFOs, aliens, crop circles, conspiracies, Bigfoot, suppressed science, ancient mysteries. Log on to www.theufostore.com and request a free UFO store catalog. Theufostore.com, the largest selection of UFO products on the internet.
Imagine no longer being tied down to your computer, but having the freedom to take live talk radio with you anywhere you go. TalkStream Live introduces our first ever iPhone application. The talk shows you follow now follow you, and your iPhone is now the fastest and easiest way to stay connected to the best talk radio on the internet. Listen to live talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Mobile talk radio from TalkStream Live, now available in the iTunes App Store.
That's terrific.
And I'm sorry, but I've gone on long enough. It was a bit of a longer episode than normal. I hope you enjoyed it. Please join me next week for more strange, unusual, and unheard of information. Thanks for listening this week to this episode of Paranormally Speaking. I'm your host, award-winning author Neil Parks, illustrator, screenwriter, playwright, the list goes on. I'm not bragging, I'm just a lot of fun, and I have a lot to offer, artistically speaking. Have a great rest of the week and a terrific weekend. I hope everyone has remained with good eyesight after the eclipse that we had on April 8th. And apparently the rapture did not happen and we're all here unharmed. So catch you next time on another fun-filled episode of Paranormally Speaking.